I'm Chris McAdoo, and this is Enjoyable Listen Time with Best Behavior, where we talk to people who make things and make things happen. And, with any luck, inspire you to do the same.
Let's talk about, this is a good kind of segue into some of those teaching moments. Sort of working your musical career, your arts management career through different places, the Lyric in Chicago. You return to Knoxville, and I want to get into the community school of the arts.
You're too old.
I'm too old. Well, I do want to say, you know, I've been involved with the community school for a few years as the community school of the arts is. Can you do a what's your 30-second?
The mission statement. The community school of the arts was founded in 1992 to provide free, quality, professional instruction in the visual and performing arts to children and young people from Knoxville's urban and rural areas.
There you go.
So kids are there for free.
And we've got I have been involved with the community school both as a poor performing board member,
but a great instructor.
I've had the pleasure of doing some printmaking classes, some art stuff.
Graphic design.
Yes,
remember that? That
graphic
was
design
amazing.
A few years ago with and brought Courtney in on that.
Yes,
I did a guitar class for Jessica Watson when she was out one semester, and then I've been involved with the side by side art
many
exhibit.
Times, yeah,
that will be live again June 2nd. Yeah, June 2nd, first Friday at Bennett Galleries, which is a really cool thing where they. You know, professional artists are paired with kids and they create side by side alongside each other. But you've got, you got guys like me, because I just come up in the phone book, but then you've also got,
yeah, that's how we recruit our people.
But you just,
this guy doesn't have a real job. He's got free afternoons.
Fine. But you've got, these incredibly talented visual artists, Robin Serber, Richard Jolly, Andy Softail,
yep.
that have been involved, and more, obviously, over the years, and one of the big things to me about a community school of the arts, after school program serving, depending on the time, between 120 to 160 kids a week.
Right.
That we see. And all of the music instructors, these are cream of the crop. Greg Horn, Nate Barrett,
Ben Maney.
Yeah, Ben Maney. Like these are the absolute top of their game.
Right.
Performing arts instructors, and that's a short version
yes,
of that list.
But
the community school of the arts, you guys have been around since 92. What do you feel like is? I mean, for one, how many kids do you think have come through the program, and what are some of the big kind of success stories that you have seen happen for a lot of these kids?
Well, everybody always asks me about how many, and I need to, and after 25 years, I need to really figure it out. Because what's more impressive than the actual number of bodies is how long kids stay there.
Mm-hmm.
So I mentioned earlier, that back in the day, the boomers, you might take 2 years of piano, for example, and then move on to something else in your life. Well, when we started in 92, we had 22 kids in our first inaugural class, and they were from ages 6 to 12.
Mm-hmm.
And what we offered at that time were piano lessons. That's how we started for one semester. And then we added the visual arts. And then after that, we added violin. So by the time we ended our first year, we had strings, piano, and visual arts. We expected that kids would take piano for a couple of years,
mm-hmm.
or if they had discernible talent, that they would want to stick with it, maybe 3 or 4. And what we did not anticipate was that kids did not leave. They sort of, our organization is an arts organization, but it also sort of became an after-school service program mm-hmm. as well. So after a couple of years, your 12-year-olds don't want to do things in the arts, like in the visual arts class, that can be done with popsicle sticks and things like that. I mean, you have to keep up with them. So we found that, oh, man, we need to really look at our curriculum. And we need to start anticipating that kids, we're just going to assume from now on that when kids come into the program, they're going to stay. Mm-hmm. And the average length of any child, and I mean any child that comes in the door, is 7 years now.
Wow.
So.
And I can speak to that. So many of the kids will come out and they can play piano, guitar. Mm-hmm. They can sing tenor. Mm-hmm. They can a lot of them will learn like modern dance.
Modern dance. They can all draw.
They can
tell
all
you
draw. And these are not one of the coolest, I think, stories of all of that. And I may get his name wrong. Isaac. He was like a fullback for one of the high schools. Went on to UT.
Isaac Mobley.
Yeah. That's
yeah.
It.
Isaac was. Isaac had been in the program. His cousins came in 93. And once a family comes in, pretty much everybody's family starts showing up.
Uh-huh.
It's almost like, you know, UT tickets or something. You have to be born to get into that rotation. But yeah, Isaac started when he played trumpet. He did piano. But he loved the visual arts.
Mm-hmm.
And he started when I have pictures of him like when he was 8 years old. So he started when he was about 8 years old. And yes, he played for West, and he played football for West, and was actually on the year that they won the championship,
yeah.
The state championship. Did a walk-on at UT. Didn't get any bids, but he did a walk-on at UT and was accepted onto the team.
Mm-hmm.
When he was in high school, this is a story I love. When he was in high school, because his mom, I love their mom. If you're listening, Kip, I love you. She told his football coaches that he would be to all the practices except on Thursdays,
mm-hmm.
when he would be taking art at the community school of the arts. And Kip is the type of person who could tell that to somebody and get away with it. I mean, his entire high school years, he was always there, and he apprenticed in side by side with Richard Jolly.
Yeah. One of the most, and if for those of you unfamiliar with Richard Jolly, a Knoxville,
icon.
He's an icon, but he's an internationally renowned glass artist.
Oh, absolutely.
Internationally renowned. You can go see a large installation of his at any given time at the Knoxville Museum of Art,
mm-hmm.
but he has such installations, I mean, all over the world. But anyway, it's a really cool experience for anybody to spend some time with him, but particularly an impressionable high schooler.
Well, you're making work.
Yeah.
You're not watching somebody do it. You are making work, and you are around fire. a couple of weeks ago, I just took a couple of new boys, meaning new to side-by-side.
Yeah.
But kids I've known for a long time, and this was their first side-by-side, and I took them to Richard and Tommy Rush's studio. And some of the instructors later said at the school said, "You took them around fire?" And I said, "Yes, I was not allowed to leave at all for one moment."
That's the best stuff.
But they're making it, and they're learning absolutely every aspect of what goes into it. The idea with side by side is that it's an apprenticeship, as close to an apprenticeship as you can get with, you know, 13, 14-year-old kids.
Sure.
But they start by telling you exactly, I mean, you learn exactly what you're doing, and by the end of the first day, you have to be able to do those steps by yourself. I mean, they will say, okay, what are you going to do now?
Sure.
And they don't want any, you don't want to fail at this, obviously. But one piece broke at the end of the day. And it was so cool because Richard said, well, that's the piece. And Samari was and Jeremiah were like, but it broke. And he's like, well, yeah.
That's part of the
broke.
Process.
That's part
but
of it.
But you put all that. It was the only, and I thought we were lucky that that was the only piece that broke during the day. And he said, yes, but that doesn't change the process. And it's still a piece.
Yeah.
Now, what you make of it at this point, it's up to the viewer. It's up to the audience. And I could not tell that the piece was broken, in fact. It looks really cool. But it was so great that that was sort of the last lesson of that day. They assumed he was going to throw it away.
And they're like, no,
and he's like, no.
You made a thing.
Yeah. You made a thing.
Yeah.
And it didn't come out the way you had anticipated, but maybe it came something else.
Well, let's...
The Brian Eno Oblique Strategies cards, one of my favorite ones is honor thy error as a hidden intention, I think is how it goes. Ooh. And that's one I've got to keep in mind all the time.
Well, to dumb that down, it's we do Bob Ross
happy little accidents.
Yeah, yeah. Same thing.
Because everybody that's understands great. Happy little accidents.
It's going to happen. Well, you still made art.
That gets us, I think, into a good spot to talk about sort of the broader subject of the finer things. One of the coolest things to me about being an artist, about creating anything, if it's music, if it's visual, if it's sculpture, if it's glass, is dealing with the things that you didn't plan for and understanding that you may have something in your mind that you want to accomplish, but that may not be what you accomplish.
Oh, yes.
And so I want you to talk a little bit about, in the context of somebody who grew up all over, and in Texas you had this incredible arts education baked into the curriculum. I want you to talk a little bit about the arts as value, as what does it mean for critical thinking skills, for creativity, for just living a full life for kids and the opportunities that brings to people.
Well, I'll tell you, the first thing that comes to mind when you ask that question and when you throw out some of those buzzwords.
Buzzwords.
Is I want to give a big shout out to Green Magnet STEAM Academy.
Okay.
Because we work with Green Magnet's after school program. And so we're there doing music and African dance 4 afternoons a week for K through 5, I think it is. And this is through the Great Schools Partnership. But this is our big after school project. And I think we've been there 3 years now. Over the last, starting last year and to this year, we've seen a transformation at Green that is super exciting. When we first went to Green 3 years ago, nothing was going on after school, and the hallways were completely blank. I mean, all the doors were locked to the school, to the rooms. All the teachers were gone by the end of the day, and it was just a blank hallway. And now teachers are there, and give it up for teachers, people.
Please.
Give it up for the teachers. teachers are wholly invested. And what we get to see now is we go down the hallway, And there are tables set up in front of all the schoolrooms, all the classrooms. And they are teaching science and math using art and music. So you might be learning about astronomy, for example, through Van Gogh's Starry Night.
Oh, wow.
You might be learning about relationships in geometry. Well, not geometry. These are elementary school kids.
Yeah.
But
math,
they'll get there. Math relationships, maybe through like color wheel or through color. I mean, they're so creative. I can't even.
Wow.
My mind can't even process it. And it's so exciting because it takes it out of the rote thinking and turns it into a creative process. So you're using both sides of the brain at the same time to do this project. And I don't know what the results are. I mean, I can't quote to you, for example, what's gone on with reading skills or anything over there. But what I see in the hallways is learning. I mean, I also see pride because you have something to show for. I mean, you have something that is a creative product that is teaching a lesson, whether it be history or geography or math or science. And it's a discernible product that you can see. It's not a test score, but all I can think about right now are the dioramas that they used to make on Community, but that everything was a diorama. But there are dioramas in the hallways of Green Magnet School, and it's just an exciting visual atmosphere.
You're living in it.
You're living in it, and you are living it.
Yeah.
And one thing that people always say about creative process, or I think a misconception. Now, everybody agrees that for music, it's a discipline. You are learning how to read notes off of a page. You have to. It's like learning a language. You have to know what the time sign is. You have to know what the key is. You have to be able to duplicate that note on that page. You practice your scales. It's a discipline. There's a misconception that visual arts is creative and that there's no discipline involved.
So fun.
It's just fun. Just express yourself. What the visual arts are, it's all problem solving. And when you look at there is nothing more terrifying as a visual artist than the blank canvas. So what we try to do, and I've been talking up our drawing skills, is that after you get that foundation, in the same way that you would learn your scales.
Shout out to Miss Jessie.
Shout out to Jessie Steinberg. that woman can teach. Then you come into my class with me and Ashton Ludden. Shout out to Miss Ashton, who teaches printmaking and is a graduate. She has her MFA from that place. UT.
There you go. She's pointing towards UT.
With the football stadium.
Right. UT. She was a student of Beauvais Lyons.
Yeah.
And then comes the whole... So then we get into things like mixed media. And so these kids come in, and basically what they have been taught up to this point is... reproduce. To draw what you've been doing with your drawing skills is here's either a live model or you're working from a picture now reproduce that.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Now it's, you're not going to, no, you can't get your, don't get your inspiration from a photograph. This has to come from you, and it has to be your visual language. So we spend like 3 months just working on what visual language is, and how you interpret that yourself. And you talk about happy accidents when you're used to reproducing, and it's mm-hmm. the same with improvisation. If you're a piano player and sure. you're going to if you are going to take with Ben Maney and he says, okay, these two, here's some measures where you're going to make some stuff up.
Yeah.
That is just horrifying. So they'll start something in the visual. My students will start something and then they'll be like, oh no, I did it wrong and I want to start over. Well, you can't start over.
You did it differently.
You cannot start over.
Oh, I like it.
You have to keep going, even with printmaking. I mean, especially printmaking, because you don't know what's coming off that press. Mm-hmm. You plan, and you think you know what's coming up. And when it's not what you thought, your immediate response is, oh, I failed. But then when we get into critique, because we're doing critique in these classes, it's, well, you didn't fail. You made something different.
Mm-hmm. And somebody's going to look at it and say, oh, that part's cool. And then that's going to be the part that made you want to throw it in the garbage.
Yes, exactly. And that's why we do critique.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And also, it gets the other kids out of their heads. And sure. one of the things that we did... the last couple of years was we were doing a lot of intuitive exercises because you just don't, and that's the most fun you can have. I'm telling you, there's nothing like doing these. These are so much fun because they hate them, but then they're amazed when you get to the results. And at the end of the process, then we start building a collaborative project on the wall just with black mm-hmm. pieces of paper and tape. What's that tape called?
Masking tape?
Electrical?
Just tape.
Duct tape, scotch tape.
Scotch tape. There you go. Magic scotch tape. So you can get it off the wall. Where one person will put something on, will put an image or a shape on the wall, and then somebody else has to put their image or shape on the wall, and it has to relate to that.
Yeah.
And everybody has an opinion. I mean, this process of just putting scraps on the wall can take an hour because everybody has an opinion. Is that balanced? Is that not? If you put that there, what happens to this over here? And it's one of the most exciting processes to see that visual arts, to understand that visual arts is what you make of it. It's not your talent or lack thereof, because you can learn those skills. You can learn those skills.
Yeah.
And so if you want, in music, if you want to get to a certain level where you can play, Bach, that's one thing. It's another thing to say, I want to write my own songs. I want to create my own music. And it's the same thing with visual arts. I want to be able to draw that box. I want to be able to draw that can. Or I want to make art that is an expression of how I feel, but I have the foundation with which to start.
Well, talking about that foundational stuff, and I know we're getting on... Almost, we've been talking a while.
You're going to edit this, aren't you?
No. Yeah. This is straight through. But I do want to be cognizant of people's of your time and your schedule. But before we kind of head off into the sunset, mm-hmm. you've now seen, you've got 25 years of this, and you've seen these kids come through, and you've lived it. You've been in the middle.
I'm living it now.
You're living it. Of seeing what being able to create, being able to make things means for a kid's life.
Right.
And I guess what is the best way or something that, how would you explain it to somebody that maybe doesn't get it?
Well, one thing I want to say is that there are, for those who like quantifiable things.
Sure.
There are studies. And one of my favorite studies was done like 3 or 4 years ago with the National Endowment of the Arts. And it was a contracted study. And there was and the question at hand was, what difference do the arts make in the lives of, let's say, at-risk kids? And they went to two different high schools. So you have a high school that's a controlled group, and that is probably why I think this study is so important, because you can look at one place and say, okay, the scores went up like this, and you can quantify it. But if you have a control group, and you can say, okay, nothing happened over here, and this happened over here. So it was a study that gathered data over a year, or maybe 2 years. It was determined that if high school kids in at-risk areas from economically depressed high schools, where there's no arts, access to arts, if those kids are getting systematic exposure and participation on a regular basis, and that is the key there. Mm-hmm. It's not a one-shot exposure. It's not that somebody is going to come in and show you how a French horn works and then go away, leaving that child to think,
what am I going to
do? How
do
you get one of those? How do I get one of those? You know? And what was found is that if a student had that systematic, constant weekly exposure to the arts, and in this case, it was strictly through after school programs, that child is 3 times more likely to graduate from high school. But then they followed it into college. That kid is also 3 times more likely to go to college or junior college or pursue a professional school. And it's more likely to be a white-collar position. So you have elevated them to their way of thinking about themselves that not only graduate from high school, but start aspiring to things like nursing, accounting. The young man you referenced, Isaac.
Yeah.
You know, Isaac got a 4-year degree from UT in nuclear engineering, and is now going to pursue a law degree.
Yeah.
Are we taking credit for it? No, but he might. He and his family might say that there is a big difference in the education that he got than his teammates, for example, might have gotten. And one of the stories I like to tell, because I think this really sums it up, and in fact, I told you this story, and this is how we came up, how you came up with a tagline for Community School of the Arts.
Oh, yeah.
Because we were going over to Green Magnet, and I was working, I went there the first year to do the visual arts until I realized that I was viewed as an old lady and that it was probably a better thing to have young people teach those classes. But I had a little girl who, she was so bright and, man, this kid had such potential, but her home life was not good, and And that's a really economically depressed area. And one day she said, just out of, we were talking about identity, and she said, I live in a poor neighborhood and I go to a poor school. And that was how she saw herself.
Yeah.
That was her identity. Her identity was where she lived and what was wrong with her school. You know, and her things that were totally beyond her control was her identity.
So basing, essentially, your identity is around things that you do not have or do not have access to.
Oh, I don't think she even saw it that way. She saw it was, this is how my neighborhood and my school are defined.
Yeah. This sucks, but this is life.
So, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
It was sort of like, this is how, you know, I'm a kid who lives in a poor neighborhood. I'm a student at a poor school. And our goal for that whole year was for her to come out of that class saying, but I'm an artist.
Mm-hmm.
To be able to say, to identify herself as an artist. I think it was the late Mrs. Floyd over at the dance studio, whose philosophy was that as soon as you walked into that dance the dancer's studio, you were a dancer. No matter what age you were, mm-hmm. you were a dancer, and you had to identify as such, and you had to behave as such. So we really endorse that philosophy, that we want kids to be able to say, I'm an artist, mm-hmm. no matter where you live, or I'm a musician, I can play this instrument, or I am a scientist, or I'm going to be a scientist, or I'm good at science, you know, or I'm good at math, that you identify yourself by what you can do,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to your environment or where you go to school, that you are defined by those things that are totally out of your control. The things that are in your control are what you create, and those are influenced by the people around you, your teachers, your mentors.
Mm-hmm.
I would say for anybody who is mentoring a child, always assume they can do it.
Hmm.
You know, don't assume they can't. Assume they can. Because I always, I think that's a philosophy.
That's fantastic. Yeah.
If they fall short, okay. They fall short. There was a, way back in 92, 93, we had a student who was good at music. He liked to write music. Now, he thought he could sing, and he kind of couldn't, but we didn't stop him. But we're talking, you know, at this point, it was like seventh or eighth grade,
uh-huh.
and he wrote a school song for Community School of the Arts, and it was like an R&B hit. You know, there's a place that, you know, it was just sort of had that, Community School of Arts. But the bridge... And we would just smile. Everybody would, you know, sort of clasp hands. But the bridge, I'll never forget this, because the lyric was, they're here to help you along the way. That's what they'll do today. And if you make a mistake, you know it'll always be okay at the Community School of Arts. And if I had if we had a motto, I think it would be that if you make a mistake, you know it's going to be okay.
Well, even redefining what a mistake is or isn't.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Like, you're
exactly.
Already, I love the thought of like assuming they can do it. And then if they do something different, then it is something different. And you do it again. Or you reset the...
Exactly. And one of our... and I probably need to knock... I've been knocking on wood for 25 years on this. But to date, we have like 3 to 4 recitals a year.
Mm-hmm.
We have never had a child quit in the middle of a performance or walk off. Or we've had some in tears... because they don't think they can make it, but they always do. And if we feel like they need some help, I mean, we'll send a faculty member just to sit up there with them to make sure their hands are in the right place. And those kids are the ones that get the audience will go nuts when that child is through.
I think there's something to be said for having, you know, been to a lot of those recitals and watched these kids. You want to talk about dealing with so many things. When you're on stage, and I've watched these kids do it, on stage and you miss a note or your timing gets off or just something happens. And every single time, with varying levels of practice, because some of them are younger, some of them are older, all that kind of thing. But every single one of those kids composes themselves and starts again. And that's just because that is what you do. Like you, when you're that, I think, you know, people are, I think, more if, when it comes to the performing, you know, sort of art side of it, is, you know, people are more frightened of public getting in front of people than death.
Right.
Yep.
So even just that, learning to compose yourself, because not everything's going to go right. And I think from a performance angle or from an artistic angle, you can assume at any given time, if you're about to go on stage or with a band by yourself, or you're about to give a presentation at work or whatever that thing is, something is not going to work. Right? Like the monitor won't turn on, the projector's broken, the mic doesn't work.
You left your mic clip at home and you've got to hold the thing in your hand.
I mean, just last week, I mean, I saw we had one of our graduating seniors is a remarkable vocalist, and he won the Grace Moore Scholarship at the University of Tennessee. So he has a full ride to UT as a serious fine arts voice major. And he gave a senior recital. Well, at a certain point, the accompanist, and I think it was actually the instrument she was playing, was just wonky. I mean, I don't know what was going on, but that young man you would never know that there was some problem. And he remained unfazed the entire time. And last week at a piano recital, one of the high school girls, she's really good, and we don't know what happened, but we knew there's been some family problems. She got up to play her piece, and she could only play the right hand. She really she just could not get those two hands together. But she didn't stop. She just continued to play the right hand, like, here's my piece. You know, and then she managed to get the other chord in her left hand at the end of it. And you applaud a child who gets through that.
And roll with it. Yeah.
Especially if you don't have the music, if you don't have the music in front of you. And we try to get everybody to memorize their pieces. Although apparently that's not a big thing anymore. I mean, when I was a kid, you had to memorize your music, son. But now we don't want them to, you know, to have a teachable moment that's not a good teachable moment.
Sure.
You know,
a good teachable moment.
I don't want some kid in here 10 years from now telling the story about how his life changed for the worse.
If it weren't for that dang nap.
If Miss Willard had let me have my music, I'd be a totally different person today.
So. Well, we have talked a lot about where you came from, the sort of winding path that led you to Knoxville and led you to the Community School of the Arts. We've talked a lot about what the arts, be it visual, be it performing, whatever, can mean. But overall, I think what we have talked about is engagement.
Yes.
You are engaging with yourself, with other people, and with a potential product, if that's art, if it's a song, if it is a creative influence. And the positive effects that those things can have on a person, a family, a community. So I want to leave everybody with actionable things, right? Mm-hmm. The arts are in the news for both good and bad reasons these days. And I'm of a firm belief that you can either complain or you can do. And I think you share that same kind of thing. So for those out there that want to learn more about arts and arts advocacy or what they can be doing, you talked about mentorship. Where's a place that, what do I do? If I'm just somebody that says, I don't know what to do about this, but I want to help out.
Well, I do think that one thing that will get you excited, we belong to a lot of advocacy groups. Mm-hmm. You do not have to belong to an advocacy group, but there's tons of information out there on what really successful programs are doing. For example, I mean, our side-by-side program, which, as I said, is an apprenticeship program, it's been, for 4 years, it's been held up as an example of one of the best arts and humanities-related youth programs in the country. Mm-hmm. And there are lots of things, but, you know, ours is a small market, obviously, and there's only so many resources to go around. I think organizations need find out what's going on locally.
Mm-hmm.
I would really say go to the Knoxville Museum of Art. Big shout out to David Butler and the Knoxville Museum of Art, because that's a live organism. That the things that you will see there, plus what they have going on for kids. I mean, that's a place where the energy is just surging, I think. And look at, I know that, you know, I remember I went to, I got to give a shout out to Aramont too, because Aramont is, after Community School of the Arts, Aramont is my second love. And I call it, you know, art camp, summer art camp for adults. And it has that same energy of playing music with other people. It's being in a room with other visual artists working on similar projects. The mm-hmm. creativity is just, I mean, it will wake you up. Yeah. And it will get you out of yourself. And we do a lot with Aramont to get kids who are over 18 and graduates of our program up there.
Aramont is Aramont School of Arts. Is it School of Art and Craft?
School of Arts and Craft. It's Aramont. I believe it's just Aramont.org.
Yeah, that's right.
But I was up there one time to take a class, and there was an artist there. A lot of people who've been who are professional artists go, and the entire 2 weeks, what he did, he was about that. He knew that after that 2 weeks, he was going back to Georgia, and he was going to be teaching classes for young people. And he drew pictures with crayons with his non-dominant hand for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Of things like robots and things. He wanted to get back to what made him excited originally about making art. And if you're my generation, I mean, think about everybody had access to something creative in their schools as they were growing up.
Mm-hmm.
Think about what made you excited.
Yeah.
Think about about those activities that woke something up in you. And right now, I know that the Big Brothers Big Sisters is doing a big push to get, I think, 100 new mentors. You know, I know you probably think of taking them to sporting events and that and tutoring and reading. Well, do some art. Mm-hmm. I mean, it may be what I call an activity rather than, an art lesson. But think about what you really enjoyed. Because I guarantee those kids, I mean, one of the things, when you walk into Green Magnet with just boxes and boxes, with just a pad of paper,
yeah,
they go nuts. Everybody wants to, everybody loves to put something down on a piece of paper. So I would say another good resource is look at the National Endowment. If you follow them on Facebook or Twitter, arts education is one of their main focuses and one of their main goals. And they will share results and share programs mm-hmm. all the time on what's successful. Same with Tennessee Arts Commission. There's a ton of things that are happening across the state. Tennesseans for the Arts is mm-hmm. actually the advocacy organization of Tennessee. And they will also hook you up. Arts and Cultural Alliance. I should have started with our hometown. Arts and Cultural Alliance. They can also steer you to advocacy programs. It's important. There's so much happening right now.
Sure.
And it's so easy for the arts to just continually fall from that top 10 list of things you want to accomplish. It was the same way in 92, to tell you the truth, that that school programs were, there was such an emphasis on we didn't call it Common Core then, but there was such an emphasis on getting back to basics.
Quantifiable, yes. Testable things.
Well, that's when when arts programs started being cut, yeah. were the early 90s, because they weren't seen as adding any visible value. Mm-hmm. And now we're in that same spiral. I mean, I used to say when we started the school, we would love nothing better to be obsolete.
Sure.
That, yeah. You know, it would be a common thing. And there was a period there in the 2000s that that I feel like, ooh, it was coming back. You know, it was something that people spoke out about. It was something that, like the Grammys, started a program.
Oh yeah.
To get, you know, a lot
of the kids, the instruments. Yes,
yeah. The you know, commercial outfits, Guitar Center. Some of the musicians of Phish started a, I think it's called Metal Lark Foundation,
yeah.
Specifically for music education. And so things started to come back, and now we're looking at a situation where we could be in danger of it just falling off the edge of the earth again. if you get my meaning and get my drift. You just can't let that happen. It's the same thing with physical education. If you're sure. not up and moving, yeah. you know, if you're not, I'm a big proponent of the standing desk, because if you're not up and moving, if your kid is just coming home and going straight to that computer or to that television, he's not going to, you actually, your neurons are not going to, they're going to yeah. bounce all
just
over the
turn
freaking place.
Gelatin.
Right.
PlayStation playing gelatinous.
Right. And
mass.
So it's the same, it's, you want to exercise that muscle just right. as much as you want to get strong physically. And
I want to, that's a really great point, because a lot of times people will talk about arts versus this,
yeah.
arts versus physical education, arts versus, or physical education versus science.
So what do you think dance is? I mean, you know.
And I think, like, it's more interesting to me, the the philosopher warrior, the philosopher artist, the like the Isaac Mobleys of the world. That I mean, seriously, that loved that loved to create, but are also like a lineman. I mean, you know, so those things that in you know in that traditional sort of rhetoric, those things don't go together, but in fact, they complement each other.
And you can really kind of break free once you get unbound from that perception of, well, I can't do art, I'm a football player, or vice versa.
Exactly. Right. That's not the case. Right. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
I mean, that's what the you had mentioned before, the sort of statement from community school, which is define your art, define yourself, define your future. And being able to define what it is you're about. And that may change. Right? I mean, you may be...
always like, changed a million times. Yeah. However, you should but be you, able to still...
If you know, if you've got something to latch onto, yeah. like, I can do this, I can make this thing, I can create, you know, that gives you such power. That gives you such... I mean, I for personally speaking, I know that that has always given me a thing, a place to hang my hat. Like, I may be doing 99 things out of 100 wrong, you know, but it's like, man, hey, I can draw. Like, give me the well, email.
And chances are, if you're good at something, I mean, we, one of our students, she's on her third year with Peter Rose, who's from Australia.
Yeah.
She didn't know anything, really, about the world. And she'd be the first to say, I didn't know anything about the world until I met Peter. Well, she now is actually doing production work with him in ceramics. I mean, they're making molds of her work. And so that has opened the door not only to become proficient in with clay,
yeah.
which she is. She could probably teach a class in it at this point. But now she's interested in everything else now. She's interested in printmaking. How does that work? You know, it just sort of opened up a curiosity that it's not going to stop. It's and she, in fact, she's a senior. She's going to break my heart. We graduated 8 seniors this year, and she's not going to major in art, but she has something that she will be able to do. I mean, she will be able to walk into a community center with some. With some clay,
yeah.
and make things, and
too cool.
and teach that to somebody else.
Well, Jennifer, thank you so much, you know, for your time today. I think we've got episode 8 and 9.
I was about to say,
I think so. We've got a solid hour and a half.
Oh, here. We've been talking. I hope everybody is.
And I'm not going to edit anything.
We're going straight on, straight through till morning. But I hope that everyone that has listened has. It has gotten a lot out of a conversation, and take it to the house that you can do something. And if you believe in creativity, if you believe in the arts, gotta fight for it because it is worth fighting for. It is worth believing in. And I have seen the positive change in kids' lives, in my own life, that making. And believing that you can make things in the first place does for a person. So
here we are.
We're making things. There you go. Thank you to George Middlebrooks. Hey, yep. George, as always,
my
for
pleasure.
keeping the recordings tight. Thank you to Jennifer Willard.
Thank you.
There you go. From Community School of the Arts. Everybody can learn more about Community School at csaknox.org or check them out on Facebook. And then in the show notes, we'll put links to the website and all of the organizations that we also talked about how you can support the arts yourself if you are interested as such. Anyway, I am Chris McAdoo with Best Behavior. You can learn more about us at wearebestbehavior.com and visit the blog and see the rest of the podcast interviews. We're on the iTunes now.
That's right. We're like real now.
We are real. You can search. Tell all of your friends and neighbors to search for Enjoyable Listen Time. That's what it's called.
It will come up. I've subscribed.
I have subscribed.
iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Overcast directory, whatever your
all the things. Your
podcast. I'm doing it right now.
There, yeah, it's that easy.
I am doing it as we speak.
But yeah, we are happy to bring this to you and talk to people that are, like I say, people that make things and people that make things happen. This is Chris McAdoo again, and I appreciate you guys for tuning in.
We are bestbehavior.com.